This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Ana Maria Sayer. Let the chisme begin.
Okay, Ana, every week we talk on Zoom, and I recognize the background, but now I'm seeing something I don't recognize. Where are you?
Surprise, I'm in Mexico City.
What are you doing there?
Okay, well, everyone has been constantly telling me that if I want to have the most beautiful, diverse, amazing musical experience, that I have to get myself to Mexico City. And so that's precisely what I decided to do, Felix.
Okay, I'm cool with that. So what have you heard so far?
Well, very excited to share that one of my first stops here was actually to visit an old friend of yours, Felix, Camilo Lara.
Camilo Lara is one of the nicest guys in the music business, and he's also one of the most prolific music producers out there.
I had to go there first because everyone has always talked to me about the famous Camilo Lara studio here in Mexico City. It's like the home base for so many artists. They come, it's in the heart of La Roma. So many people have gone through those doors, worked on their albums, created something special. So I had to be there.
My conversations with him in the past have always been centered around what he creates in that studio. I've always been impressed by the fact that he has big ears, as people in the music business say. He listens to a lot of different types of music, and he produces a lot of different types of music. And I think that's reflected in how he grew up there in Mexico City.
You know, we got to chat about that and so much about what it means for him to exist in multiple worlds. Here's my conversation with Camilo.
I learned English at school and through the Beatles. Like everyone here in Mexico, probably the Beatles had a lot to do
to learn English.
It was funny because when I was growing up and I was listening, I didn't know what they were saying. Like I was listening to Bob Dylan or Los Lobos, or later I discovered they were great lyricists. But at the beginning, it was just about music.
So you had to fall in love with the sound first before anything, no?
Always. I still, when I'm listening to music in English, it's hard to me to keep on with the lyrics. I had to listen several times to understand what they're saying.
Is it different for you? Like what you hear first, is it different for you when you listen to a song in Spanish?
Absolutely. And I think in general, Spanish-speaking music, the mix of the music, it's way different than the English one. Lyrics are way up on the mix, the vocalist. So, and in English, seems to me sometimes it's just one instrument more, and it's a different take on how people mix in the U.S. and in Mexico, definitely.
Why do you think that is?
We have a big legacy on lyrics, and I think they're really important most of the time, and the people really want the audience to understand what they're singing. Mm. So, for example, in pop music, you can tell, like, in Spanish, it's loud, and people care about lyrics a lot. Mm. And I think in English, not all the time. Like, there's some music that is very heavy on the message, but there's some music that the singer can be, like, one more player in the band.
It strikes me as interesting that the lyrics seem to be the most important thing, even though there's such a variety of types of sounds here.
Yeah, well, I guess the Mexican songbook, like the Mexican Gershwin or the Mexican Bernstein, is people that really were into amazing lyrics, like José Alfredo Jiménez, Juan Gabriel. Tú eres la tristeza y de mis ojos. Llorar en silencio por tu amor,
miro en el espejo y veo en mi rostro el tiempo que he sufrido por tu adiós.
There are so many songwriters that were defining what we were as a nation through the lyrics. So that Mexican songbook has been very powerful, and it's very interesting how new generation are still taking a look on that and being influenced by those fantastic songwriters. And you can see on those lyrics like some hints of what we are as a nation. There's a lot of values that they are floating around in Mexican culture, and you can tell they are on those songs.
So for you as a producer, as someone who works with so much sound, do you feel like there are ways that you try or just naturally do represent those values or those things that were started by those artists in your sound?
Yeah, I love, and I always love tropical music, music that like cumbia, danzón, cha-cha-cha, mambo, all the music that was made for dance floor. But I also love the classical Mexican songwriters that were fantastic songwriters, and they had magical lyrics. But I guess at the beginning of when I was starting to do music, I found that there was a very important connection between rhythm, local rhythm that was happening since the 40s, 30s in Mexico, and electronic music and hip hop and all the stuff that I was listening when I was growing up. So I always was very interested in making that connection, that it doesn't matter how old the music is or where it comes from. It can live together in a universal dance floor. And for me, that's cumbia, for example, that just cross borders and it can be played next to a hip-hop track and it sounds great.
Looking for M's like I lost a friend. Jump out of my bed like we're the bread. You go hold the egg, waiter bring a check. When we talk, we collision the car. Keep us in your thoughts, fully dressed at the crack of dawn. Weapons letting off, I can hear them from the block. See them creeping through the floor. Season's greetings, that feeding season can start. Oh my God, look alive. Looking like I live life on a crooked line. Doing fine, you are maximum stupid, I am the guy.
Growing up here, what was the first moment for you that you really thought, like, I'm gonna start making music? I feel like this is something that I have to do.
I was super young, like probably like 14, 15, and I started to sneak into parties and going to raves and just hanging out with friends and listening to hip-hop, some amazing records that were happening at the end of the 90s. So I thought that was what I wanted to do. But at the same time, I started sampling, and all the samplings came from old records, old Mexican or Cuban or Colombian records. So it didn't matter how much I tried to sound like Kraftwerk, I end up sounding more like Totó la Mampocina or tropical music from Latin America, because the samplers were originally from that. I embrace it. I think it defined my personality as a musician, to understand where I was from and what I wanted to do and try to be proud of that. So I started DJing at raves and parties where electronic music was happening. And they were like, oh, dude, like, you're playing cumbia. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, cumbia is for other, like, don't play cumbia here. And
this is the worst party ever.
Yeah. So I was very unpopular until I was not. It took me a lot of years to convince people that cumbia was cool. And at the same time, there was my generation, there were a bunch of people doing that in Colombia, in Argentina, in the US, everywhere. I think my generation kind of grew up playing that in clubs and trying to experiment with that. So I was not alone.
Yeah.
And suddenly, after many years, I think it happened and it was fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, what changed in the city Did something change where people became more open, more receptive, more excited about sounds like cumbia?
Yeah, I think it was when I was growing up, when people asked me how was Mexico City at that time, I always said it was like, I was never in New York, but I think it was like the movie After Hours by Scorsese in New York, that everything was kind of chaotic and very rough and wild, and every night was like a different adventure. But at the same time, there were a lot of clusters of people doing interesting stuff. They were the filmmakers and the people on theater and the musicians, and we all hung out at the same party. So you kind of knew what the other artistic combos were doing. So it was very healthy, and it was wild. Like it was the city was super violent, super dangerous, but exciting and fun. It's way different from what it is now, Mexico City. Mexico City now is a very sophisticated capital. I always say Mexico City is a 30 million city, but we all know each other.
¿Cuánto tiempo va a pasar para que pueda mejorar? Todos somos víctimas de un estado confiscado, con un gobierno involucrado en las ganancias del narco. Es una nación podrida con la población herida. México.
So fast forward from all of that, now you have this studio in La Roma, and it's very different, I'm assuming, from what it was before. Why is this where you decided to make your home base for your music, for your production?
The La Roma earthquake of 85, many buildings fall down, and until the 90s, it kind of got empty. So when I moved here, it was very cheap place to live and to own a property and to have a studio. Then gentrification happened as everywhere in the world, and it became there open galleries and then condos, and then it's just a lot of place with a lot of coffees and restaurants. And so, but at the beginning, it was like an area where all the young people was living because it was affordable and it was easy to live. And I'm one of the original from back in the day. And I decided to put my studio because it's still a great area. And it still feels very like a lot of musicians and people from art lives here.
So what does it take? I mean, as an artist, like what does it take to be able to walk through these doors and work with you? What do you look for in artists you work with?
I mean, probably that's what I'm interested on, people that have a center as an artist and can be expressed in lyrics, can be expressed in music, and people that understand their DNA as a creator. And that's very exciting when you find someone that has their own voice, their own sound, their own idea of what their art is, and they express it in various ways.
Mm-hmm. But when working with como a less established artist or someone who's still figuring out what that DNA is, do you see yourself as someone who's helping them discover that?
Of course. Yeah, that's a process. And I think you never end up figuring out who you are at all. But you're trying, at least. And I think that's the beauty of it. I think music, in a way, is an open diary of who you are at the moment you created it. So it's always great to see how people are finding their own voice and experimentating and getting into conclusions or into mistakes also. That's the beauty of creating music.
Do you see certain messages or certain values when you hear that expressed in a song? Do certain things feel more important than others to you to express lyrically in a song?
I would say the only thing I like is to have your own personality. I respect and admire people that have a whole universe inside and they're just trying to let that show to the world. And I think that's what makes us unique and different from each other. And that's the beauty of it. I don't love derivative stuff and people that are trying to follow trends. And I think I'm more into the rebels of the whole thing.
We'll be right back with Ana Maria's conversation with Camilo Lara right after this break.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Carvana, on a mission to make car buying more convenient and affordable than ever before. In minutes, you can browse thousands of options under $20,000. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today to get started.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
So for you, when you make music personally, how do you find your own distinct voice message? I mean, you're working with like a million different types of people and artists and sounds, and you're the cumbia guy and you're the electronic guy and you're all these different things. But when you sit down to write your songs, to make your music, how do you find your own personal identity?
It's funny because over the years, my music has a fit into my culture, my community where I'm from. That has been my only steady thing in what I have done. But if you have that as a starting point, you can do traditional music or electronic music or experimental music. Now that I have many years, working on music, I can see that as the unificator of what I've been doing. And I think music should be an agent of change in your community, and to portray your community, to help your community. So I think that's what my motto and my mantra is, that. I think through music you can change, not the world, because it's very ambitious, but at least your block.
Si me encontrara a Dios, le pediré unas quesadillas. Si me encontrara a Dios, le pediré unas quesadillas. Si me encontrara al chamuco, le pediría chicharrón. Si me encontrara al chamuco, le pediría chicharrón.
How do you feel like you get to do that being here? What does that look like for you?
Many ways. It's ambitious, but it's like kind of an action plan. I have the studio as a place that can be helpful for people doing music. I also collaborate with a lot of young people and different artists to create community and to try to get the word out there what is happening here. So I think that plan can change your block. And I do believe if you change your block, you can change your state, then your city, the country. But you have to change yourself first.
Meaning what?
I do believe in collaboration, in community. And once you have that, I think you can start operating and helping.
What do you think in you made you feel like you wanted to create that community? I mean, you don't have to want to change your block, right?
You have to. I mean, that's all you have. Like, I think we are a product of where we are and a product of the influences we were either geographically or mentally. My influences were also music from the UK or hip-hop, but I feel I'm part of that community too. Everything you consume in terms of creativeness makes you who you are. That's important to me.
Para hablar en las rolas, aunque luego mi discurso sea bien limitado y mis rimas sean baratas con vocablo sa, 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 zapatito blanco, zapatito azul, dime cuántas rimas tienes tú, cuántos pandilleros has matado para que te persiga el Estado. Que todos los hechos tienen un efecto, ofendes a un machín que es poderoso y al infierno.
It's really interesting to me that there is a huge burgeoning rap scene here, that I feel like I've been talking to a lot of people about that since I've gotten here. Does that feel, I don't know, there's so many sounds and types of music that have come out of here. Is there something specifically you think about right now that is creating that moment musically in the city?
Yes, it's the golden age of hip-hop in Mexico. Hip-hop 8 years ago was something that was marginal. And I think this new generation completely changed the whole idea of that hip-hop can be something powerful and commercial. And these kids just came and did a whole different idea of what hip-hop was. And now you have a super healthy scene.
Yeah.
Not only in Mexico City, like Santa Fe Clan is from Guanajuato, or Alemán is from Los Cabos. No, the product is from LA, but she's bicultural and she's amazing. Like, it's very exciting to see it blossom.
And how does working with artists like that differ for you than working with an artist who's, say, doing like way more classic stuff that's super traditional or more lyrics focused or whatever it might be? How does that differ for you?
It might sound weird, but I think when you work with Santa Fe Clan or with Lila Downs, they all have the same energy as creators. And what I mean is they both have a very clear idea of what they are and what they're not. Doesn't matter if you do electronic music or hip hop or traditional music. If you're one of those artists that glow and that have that very clear idea of who you are as an artist, it's kind of the same energy. And I love it because there's beauty in all genres and there's beauty in different expressions of music. So I feel very lucky to be a double agent and to work with traditionals or super modern artists.
They don't know.
They don't know. And don't tell them.
With Santa Fe Clan, you're the cool hip-hop producer. How much of you is in that, with both of those artists, with all those kinds of artists, how much of Camilo is in that music, though?
A lot. I think, of course, it's their project and it's their idea, but it's a journey you take together. And it's the songs that you record are like a diary and what you were thinking on that exact day and what you thought it was good to do on that day. Probably in a month you listen and you were like, oh, I would do the music different or the lyrics I would change. But that's a snapshot of who you were. So it's a journey and that's the beauty. It's the complicity of being together and create something. And something came out and for good or for bad, that stays as it is.
That has to be kind of crazy for you, though, because it's like you're reading someone's diary. That's the relationship.
It is absolutely intimate. It's yeah. Super intimate. And at the same time, it's something that meant to be public, but that it comes from a very private place. That's the beauty of music. You chase moments and feelings and can be very personal and at the same time so universal, because we kind of all go to the bathroom, smile, laugh, have broken hearts.
We all kind of
do the same, have the same machinery.
That's so interesting to me, because you are so distinct in that you are so influenced by this city and your experiences here and all the different sounds. But then at the end of the day, you're just trying to create something universal.
Or particular.
I
would like to think more than I'm creating something so intimate that someone will connect with that in that intimate place. But I mean, the ultimate goal is to be universal, but that's more ambitious.
Yeah. Does it feel weird for you because you work with so many artists where you're like, you as an artist might feel that this is super distinct or individual or unique, but I've worked with 50 artists. And so I, in a way, I almost feel like I have heard or seen a little bit of this before. Does that ever happen to you?
No, I hope never happens, because it's not like doing pizzas. Like I think a pizza, you can do the same recipe over and over and over and over. And the minute you start doing that with music, it became a pizza. And I think that's the beauty of songs. Like, most of them last between 2 and 4 minutes. Most of them have chorus and verses. But what happens is, and the way you make it, it's like a fingerprint. It becomes very particular and very different. So thinking on one song as a fingerprint, it makes you understand that even though they have the same elements, they can be absolutely different. And from the way they are created to the way they end up sounding.
We kind of started by talking about the greats that have lived here and their lyricism and the reasons that, like you said, people gravitate towards the lyrics, towards the emotion. Do you feel like there's an equivalent of that today, like a type of music or an artist or something that is being created today that is really, the people are gravitating towards that expression?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not so long ago, I was here at the studio with Silvana Estrada, which is, for example... probably one of the most exciting voices in Mexican music. I don't know. I mean, there's a very healthy scene of people just creating beautiful songs, and a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah. What do you think about them makes it so special?
They are reinventing the language, and they are reinventing the convention of being a crooner. And that's always exciting when people that know how to play a game and they just reimagine it. I think that's what is happening. And they are adapting it to be contemporary and having being part of the discussion. I don't know, Silvana Estrada is a great example. Their music is related to all the Latin American singers from the 60s and 70s. But her take on that is for the future. In a way, her music is futuristic and it's very now, and it showcases Mexico today.
You know, Felix, it is honestly so ironic to me that he ended that interview telling me about all of the artists that are showcasing Mexico today, because sitting in that studio, I felt like I was watching Mexico on display through the art that he is creating.
That's always been the case. That's so funny that you say that, because I've always had the same feeling after talking to him and watching his music again over the years and all the things that he's produced.
There's something about the way that he embodies the energy of not only Mexican music as it stands right now, because he's working on everything. No, like, he is really representing the gamut of what is Mexican music at this moment, but also just the ways that you can chart the history of the city through his experiences. I mean, there's few people that I think hold that much of the heart of a city and the artistic expression of a city in their own personal story.
I'm really glad we got a chance to catch up to Camilo and fill us in on what he's doing and what he's thinking about in the future. I'm going to be looking for his name in film credits a little bit more moving forward.
Oh my God, Felix, he showed me a score he's working on. I was practically in tears.
I can't wait to hear it and to see it, since it's going to be part of a film. And that's going to do it for our show this week. Alt Latino is a production of NPR Music.
Huge thanks to our editor, Hazel Sills.
And also big thanks to Grace Chung, who keeps things under control.
And our production assistant, Jerusalem Truth.
And our interns, Sophia Seidel and Pilar Galvan.
And, of course, big thanks to our audio editor, Robin Hilton.
And the jefe in chief, Keith Jenkins. I'm Felix Contreras.
I'm Ana Maria Sayer. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election: guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.